I'm Realtor Heather Womack. I grew up in Minnesota and love all the outdoor activities we have here. In fact, I love Minnesota so much that I moved back here from Europe to raise my family in the land of beautiful hikes, refreshing clear lakes, and winter fun. That's why I'm reaching out. As a realtor, I've helped hundreds of folks buy their first home, sell the home they have, purchase a lake cabin, or start investing in Minnesota real estate. If you love adventure but need some new scenery, call me. My website is heatherwomackrealty.com. That's Heather Womack, W-O-M-A-C-K, realty.com.
Hello and welcome to the Reverend Hunter Podcast. This is Tony Jones. I'm the Reverend Hunter. Joined, as always, by the goose to my maverick, Brandon, the producer engineer extraordinaire.
That's my favorite one so far. I like that.
Are you excited about the Top Gun reboot?
I'm not going to say if I am or not excited until I see much of it. Reboots are not necessarily my thing, but I'm sure I'll love it. Like, Top Gun was such a huge part of me when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah.
But at the age, I wanted to be in the Air Force so bad. We went on a trip to the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs when I was a kid. And then I realized that they yell at you a lot, and it's a lot of hard work. And I don't know if I want to do that.
Well, I guess, and it's not really a reboot exactly. It's probably a sequel, right? I mean, a long time in the future sequel, but I think it's going to be awesome, man. It's one of those, it's like, I want to get my vaccine so I can go see it in a theater, because it seems like one of those movies you're going to want to watch in a theater. Hey, before we get into it too far, I want to thank the latest sponsor of Talk North Podcast Network is Heather Womack, a realtor at Coldwell Banker. So Heather, thank you so much for your support of the Talk North podcasts. And you know, we don't, Brandon, you and I don't often talk about this, but this is a big podcast family that we're a part of, including a bunch of hunting shows and some, you know, even more sports shows, Minnesota themed sports shows. And you've been a busy guy. A lot of winter podcast producing. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. It's been a pretty hectic first couple months of the year with all the podcasts that we have on Talk North, but what a cool job, right? I get to produce podcasts, so there's no complaining on my front.
Well, there's a lot of there's a lot of coaching changes going on in Minnesota sports, so I'm sure you're hearing a lot about that, and people want coaches thrown out, and because as usual, Minnesota sports teams are not doing well this winter.
Wait, what? I mean, I'm a fair weather sports fan, but I'm glad I get my fix with the network here, because I get to stay up to date on everything, and then I can shoot the S with people that I don't know about sport.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Courtney and I took our first trip in over a year, and we went to Colorado to visit some friends. If anybody follows the Reverend Hunter on Instagram, you saw some photos from Colorado. We just had a fantastic time, and I got to do some Nordic skiing way up high in a high meadow on top of about 8 feet of snow on a beautiful 35 degree sunny day. It was stunning. We had to take a snowmobile up there, and it was really amazing. Sat in some hot springs out there in Colorado, hung out with our friends, worked on some I've fashioned a few new cocktails for some articles that I'm writing, and so we workshopped the cocktails behind a very famous bar that Butch Cassidy carved his name into. So yeah, it was pretty great to get away for a few days.
That sounds like the best way to like get that one trip you could finally get in. You did plenty on it, so that sounds like the best way to do it.
Yeah, we squeezed a lot in, which was super, super fun. How about you? Anything else? You've been able to have any fun lately?
I've been enjoying the warmer weather here in Minnesota. I mean, it's like 20s, even 30s. So I've been going on walks with my dog a lot more. But that's how I've been enjoying it. I've just been, just going outside and enjoying the weather, getting some vitamin D.
Yeah, that's good. Well, it is. I mean, there's signs of spring. It snowed this morning and it's already melting. So it is good. Yeah, I'm taking the dog on a long walk this afternoon. Hey, you know, speaking of changes, this is our last podcast we have from the vault, and that is with my buddy Bob Timmons, one of my dearest friends. Bob and I, we recorded this actually before COVID, and we have had it banging around on computer drives until just, you know, we recorded about a year ago, actually almost exactly a year ago. So this is a perfect time, I think, to release it. But I'll just say a little bit about Bob. I mean, he is one of my dearest friends. We became friends because he's my editor at the Star Tribune when I write for the Outdoors Weekend section. But our friendship really went beyond the professional when we took our first trip to the Boundary Waters, which we talk about in our conversation. And since our conversation, Bob and I have been back to the Boundary Waters. We did an epilogue journey where we hiked the Grand Portage, and people can read about that in the Star Tribune. Just search my name in the search bar of the Star Tribune, or search, you know, Grand Portage, and you're going to find that article that Bob was a part of that one too. So we've done two trips up there. As you'll hear in our conversation, we're a couple fellas who are about the same age and have the same situation of, you know, taking care of aging parents, and both of us have lost our dads. And so that's a lot of what we've talked about when we've been hours and hours in canoes together. So it's a pretty special friendship to me, and I'm really, really glad to be able to bring this conversation to the listeners.
It was a fun conversation. It was one of the first, it was like maybe the second thing that we ever recorded together.
I think that's right.
So yeah, it'll be a good dip back in time and simpler days a year ago.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thanks everybody for your support. We would love for you to rate and share and subscribe and review the podcast on the different podcast services. If you're interested in sponsorship, we'd love to hear from you as well. But mainly, we're just super glad you listen, and we hope that these conversations about finding some spiritual centeredness in the outdoors are a blessing to you, and we'll keep bringing them to you every other week. Thanks a lot. And here's my conversation with my dear friend and the editor of the Star Tribune Outdoors Weekend section, Mr. Bob Timmons. Hey, buddy. Thanks for coming in.
Absolutely.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, it's been happy so far.
Has it? Been a good day?
Yeah, by and by, yeah.
Do you remember the day of your birth? No. What was your favorite birthday growing up? Do you have like one birthday you remember?
Remember turning 5, like intimate, like Intimately. 5.
Really?
Just, yeah. And we were living in New Jersey at the time.
And did you have a party?
I don't recall a party. I mean, it was my mom and my brother Mark. My mom was, you know, single mom working and so forth. But I just remember 5 being feeling
a big deal.
Yeah, for some reason. Maybe something was going on in school too that got me fired up. And I knew it, and it's Abe Lincoln's birthday.
Oh, so, no kidding.
So for years, little guy thinking it was just me and Abe who had February 12th as our birth dates.
That's
and
awesome.
And then I had that was punctured sometime in like late middle school. And then I don't even think I responded to the kid who was like, you know, what are you talking about? Okay, 3 of us have February 12th. So, yeah, no, for the longest time, I thought me and Abe.
I remember one time there was some teacher, it was like in a math class or something, and the teacher was like, I will bet anybody in this room $5 that there are 2 people in this class with the same birthday. And everyone's like, I'll take that bet. That's what are the chances? And so, you know, and then, of course, he goes around, and I guess you got 30 kids in a classroom. And, you know, 365 days in a year, whatever. I guess there were certain odds that he played. And
yeah,
it's not that uncommon to have the same birthday as somebody.
And blew their minds or something.
I have the same birthday as Rene Descartes. So does 56, does it match that same excitement as age 5?
No. In fact, a few days ago, my wife reminded me that my birthday was coming up. I mean, I knew we were getting close to the 12th. I couldn't remember which day exactly it was, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Now, being somebody who works in the newspaper industry, I would think you would know
what day it is every day.
Yeah.
You know, like you guys kind of have a job where it's important to know the day.
Yeah, to match those up, the day
the day
of the week.
The day on the masthead and the day that the articles do. And
yeah. No, I think with this outdoor section, I find myself very much focusing on Monday and Tuesday, which are heavy sort of editing days and getting things lined up for that Friday section. And then Wednesdays tend to be sort of a true hump day in terms of the section. I use that day. By that time, most of the outdoors copy, as you might know, having done
some writing for you.
By Wednesday, I've moved all that copy for that Friday section. You know, photo decisions have been made, but things have gone through other eyes and so forth. And so that Wednesday I really used to, you know, think farther out. Even today I was already bird dogging things for 2 and 3 weeks down the line, or somebody's calling me.
Because today's a Wednesday.
Yeah, today's a Wednesday. Someone's pitching me a story, something's, you know, 2-3 weeks out. So
somebody pitches you a story on a Monday or Tuesday, it sits in your inbox till you get later in the week, and then you
look at it. Certain ones are higher level than others. But yeah, I could get pitched something on a Monday about something white, what feels white hot or has or needs to be talked through about, wait, let's not wait 2 weeks. Can we turn it now? And who, you know, what's the angle? Who do we need to talk to really do it well? Do you have enough time to report it? You and I have had these sorts of discussions all the time on things. And depending on what the story is, can we say it in a, is it something we should be saying in a new way and not acting like we've been asleep at the wheel and like jumping in late. So, but anyway, yeah.
Okay. So. I have a question to change subjects on about your religious upbringing.
Yeah.
Christian Science.
Yes.
So here's the thing I've been thinking about in preparing to talk to you. You've kind of described it to me in the past as you guys weren't like really hardcore Christian Scientists. You were kind of lukewarm Christian Scientists. But it seems like Christian Science, you either go to doctors or you don't go to doctors. There's not like,
if you do go to doctors, you make sure you're doing it at the under the cloak of night, you know, and not being seen.
I mean, this is what I'm asking. Like, we only go to doctors when your fever's over 103. But before that, we think God's going to heal us.
No, you know, the thing is, you know, everything in retrospect, right? I mean, I'm a little kid, you know, going to Christian Science Church every Sunday, and then, you know, seeing mainly with, you know, again, my mom, single mom, we spent a lot of time with her parents, my grandparents, who were devout Christian Scientists. You know, my grandmother Betty was a practitioner.
And in
Christian Science, that you heal through prayer.
Faith healer.
So she would get calls from anywhere, country, world, saying, you know, Betty, I've got stage 4, you know.
Would she then pray from her kitchen, or would she get on a plane and fly to that person?
Pray in the kitchen
for that person.
Pray for that person. So she got paid to do that as well.
And then what would she say when it wouldn't work? What's the answer in Christian Science when it doesn't work?
God's will, I'm assuming.
Well, I mean, you were there.
Or to what end? You know, well, you know what? You're a kid, you know, everything's an open book. And it was almost, you know, the innocent, that's just what my grandmother did. I don't think that I really,
You didn't ask her big theological questions on your fifth birthday?
No. But I don't think I even, maybe I was, you know, thick as a post at that time or something. I'd never, like, put that then on, well, wait a minute, you know, are there other practitioners out there? I never had that thought. But it made sense. I think it made sense to me. That's why there maybe wasn't more questioning. My grandmother was a very loving, very compassionate, very loving person. And it just sort of made sense to me that, of course, she prays for people, prays for their health. And then they were also readers in the church. So it's been interesting now in my adult life and working in newspapering for now, you know, going on 30 years and knowing that Christian Science, whenever it's in the news, you know, getting a significant headline, it's about Christian scientists who aren't taking their kids for medical care when they've got a bowel obstruction or what have you, and it ends up in the courts or the child dies, you know, and it's, yeah. Who are these Christian yeah. scientists? When I was living it, you know, as a little kid, all I saw again were my grandparents and parents and loving friends at church. I did wonder, you know, I did wonder about, we went to Wednesday evening church. Mm-hmm. Wednesdays were, there would be a short sermon and then anyone could get up and talk about something in their lives.
Like give a testimony.
Testimony, yeah. Exactly. Uh-huh. Your chance to testify to God's conviction or something, or healing in your life. And I didn't like going to Wednesday. I was like, oh my gosh, you know, you'd be falling asleep in the pew kind of thing.
Because people would just
But every now and then there'd be something, you know, just some arresting story of someone's, you know, what they claim is healing through prayer or a practitioner's help or just through, you know.
What was your...
But I was going to say, you know, Mary Baker Eddy, who was maybe the icon connected to Christian Science, you know, she was healed through prayer. She claims to have been healed through prayer, and that set her down the stage of Christian Science. And the science part comes in, which sounds, you know, what Christian Science?
It sounds oxymoronic. Yeah.
Yeah, the science part comes in, what she would claim, it's like power of the mind, like the science of the mind. And then you'd have the Bible as, you know, the Word of God, and there'd be a reader at church, and then there you'd be reading the scriptures by Mary, like her interpretation. The second reader read the interpretation of that scripture.
So did she have interpretations of every single text in the Bible?
Yes. And so my grandparents were readers as well at the church. So my grandfather at a time was first reader, and my grandmother was second reader. So there, you know, as you went through that church program, you know, the first reader got up and then the second reader got up and then the first reader came up and the second reader came up and it went on like that. But I would sit around the table at my grandparents' house and we'd mark their books, mark their Bibles for their readings in that coming Sunday things like that. Yeah. So, and it's just what you did. Like we would do that and then we'd go out and see granddad's beehives, you know, we'd be kicking around in the yard.
In some ways for you, it wasn't unlike anybody else who grows up in any other faith tradition. You're like, well, this is what my family does.
Yeah.
But you must have known when you were, I don't know, going to school or something that, we're a little, something's different.
Yeah.
And how did you see...
My parents left science too.
First of all, before they left, how did you see other versions of Christianity? Was it like we're the only true one? They're all whack jobs, or like, hey, we're normal, just like Presbyterians?
Yeah, the latter.
Even though Presbyterians don't think you're normal, like
yes,
like I was brought up being told Christian Science was a cult,
right?
Around Mary Baker Eddy and like
yeah. Yep.
Crazy faith healing.
Yeah.
Like it's in whatever the book my youth pastor had. I think it's called Larson's Book of Cults.
Yeah.
Jehovah's Witnesses, Mormons, Christian Science.
Well, where that whole healing part comes in, Mary Baker Eddy went on and on about that anything material and of man was sort of immaterial, meaning that sickness was just a belief. And that's how you get to the idea of, well, if sickness is just a belief and like a, not a sin, but then it can be healed through the power of the mind, you know, and the power of prayer and healing.
Yeah.
So sickness was just like, oh, you're bringing this on yourself. It wasn't like a material thing. So it was, but my parents,
okay, so your mom got remarried.
Mom remarried.
And you were how old?
Oh, I think it was eight or nine. 1972, and my stepdad
became your dad.
Yeah, like, my stepdad was also a Christian Scientist as well.
He was.
Yes, but they were not. Oh, I would say things started to really veer within the next 5 or so years, mid-70s, late 80s.
So like you're late in 70s. High school.
Yeah. No, like I'm in
middle school.
I'm in, yeah, late middle school.
So
middle
your
school.
Mom gets remarried when you're in middle school, yep. And then the two of them start to become disaffected.
Pull away, yep. Pull away, because they were, you know, things like, you know, even like the no smoking, no liquor, you know, all these things that were, you know, and then definitely, I do recall having a conversation about that medical care where my parents are, you know, well, no, you're going to go see a doc, you know, they drew the line at some of the things. And I think, you know, we didn't have a lot of discussions later after we ended up going to a Presbyterian church for some time. We ended up at congregational churches, definitely into my high school years. But we didn't much talk about leaving science so much. I just knew that my parents, yeah, it was almost like science light for them, maybe a little bit or something. You know, they weren't going to be bound.
So
they weren't going to be bound by some of these.
It wasn't a dramatic break. They kind of faded away.
No, and it wasn't anything that, in my recollection, that was like a big wedge in the family.
Okay.
You know, my grandparents were still devout scientists, you know, to the last breath. So, and it certainly wasn't judging. I wasn't judging them.
So death was not just a state of mind. It was an actual thing that happened.
Yeah, but you're right. My grandmother could not pray her way out of that one. But yeah, it's you know, even you and I talking, I know we've kind of picked it up and it's dropped here and there and we've talked about it, but it certainly has made me kind of think about, you know, what maybe, you know, my lasting thoughts about it or when I think I cared more about missing people. Again, I honestly, I'll always, if I had to pick, you know, two words out of, you know, thinking about my grandparents and, you know, we all have crazy families, but they were just the most compassionate people and humble and curious. And I saw that repeatedly. I saw it at church. Yeah. I saw it at home. I saw, you know, other things that, you know, frictions and things too.
That puts a very different face on what would otherwise be considered an odd or troubling religion.
Yeah.
Is compassionate people, right?
Right.
Like if your grandparents would have been zealous Pharisees,
right,
fundamentalists, right, Bible bangers, you would have been like, out.
Yeah. And we were, you know, they were having friends over all the time, or we were going over to picnics, and you know, we certainly got to, and maybe it was because, you know, we spent an inordinate amount of time with my grandparents in Connecticut. You know, we really got to know a lot of their friends. You know, Christian Science has these reading rooms. I mentioned the way things are changing culturally, demographically, graying out of, you know, I'm surprised science has actually hung on in maybe some towns. I mean, I can drive by the Christian Science Church in White Bear Lake, and there's a little reading room, you know, I don't know.
Tell me what what's that reading room? What are those?
The reading rooms are a place to, you know, sort of sink into the word.
It seems like
literature that Mary Baker Eddy's written.
It seems like kind of a proselytizing thing.
Yes.
You know, right. To invite other people, curious people in.
Yeah, it could be. But I, you know, my recollection of reading rooms are going in there, and the only person in there is the church volunteer who's at the reading room that day.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I drove to White Bear right now and went down to the Christian Science reading room, I doubt it would even be open, to be honest.
I mean, the funny thing about reading rooms growing up, it seems there was always on like some really nice real estate.
Yeah.
You know, like the one in Uptown, I've always thought, there's that empty room. There'd be one volunteer sitting in there like, this is expensive.
Yeah. Yeah, keep the lights on.
There must have been some money floating around. I know there was a newspaper for a long time.
Well, I would say that, you know, whoever owns the Christian Science Church in White Bear and its reading room have a choice little spot downtown as well. And I'm sure, like, you know.
Well, what, okay, what was your upbringing in the outdoors?
You know, it was really varied. I mean, not like master narrative of, you know, say Minnesota with hunting and fishing. I recall this sort of, and again, it was a different time, but in the late 60s, you know, early mid 70s, I was living in Connecticut, and I pretty, you know, lots of woods, close to the coast, close to Long Island Sound. We just had a run of the place. I mean, I got home for dinner. It was that classic, like, hey, I run into somebody and your mom wants you home for dinner. Otherwise, we were just in the fort, building forts in the woods, mm-hmm. riding bikes to the beach, you know, fishing occasionally and things like that. But just sort of a wild youth in that regard.
Yeah.
And then my both my parents, I wouldn't call them, I think my dad definitely had a sort of a bent for the outdoors. We spent a lot of time at the beach, even once we moved up into Massachusetts. We lived on the Cape for years, up and down the South Shore, North Shore of Boston. And we were at the beach every weekend, mm-hmm. you know, walking the beach. Just out hitting trails and things like that. So, I think time period, in addition to living in a beautiful and sort of, diverse area, like the, you know, the beach shore and things definitely, kind of set, you know, that kind of has set in me, you know, foundationally in the way I, you know, now I'm just drawn to being, you know, kind of finding my peace outside. So
I mean, did you ever, I guess, feel any kind of pull or call when you were a kid to the outdoors, or when you were a young man, you know, going through a hard time or anything like that? As you're exploring your own sense of self and your spirituality, as so many of us do in late adolescence, you know.
Yeah.
Was the outdoors a part of that for you at that time, or has it been more recently that it's become more important, more of a guiding force in your life?
Yeah, I would, maybe it it speaks to my lack of self-reflection or something. I don't recall at a young age, like, going to find that peace, like, you know, the way I've certainly in my job have talked to young people teenagers thinking of the DNR roundtable, people talking about how the outdoors kind of resets them, you know, grounds them.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I was so used to just being outside, but no, it's definitely been later in my life. More questions. You know, thinking about how my spirituality, spirit, and, you know, overlaps with nature and the spirit of nature, the way I feel, you know, the way, tell me if I'm getting off.
No, this is exactly what I want to hear,
no,
this, hear from you about.
The spirit of nature and thinking more broadly about sort of our interconnectedness. Mm-hmm. You know, you and I, when we were in the Boundary Waters last June, and you wrote about this in the series, and just made a quick note of it. But when we were on Wadup and we saw that moose, mm-hmm. The calf, with the cow, and, you know, and I was saying, it just was, beyond, we had already been having, just like settling into our trip and just really feeling, even though we had, you know, had a lot of work to do and had done work before that and we're going to, but we, maybe partly it was because we were kind of in the flow, mm-hmm. but that moment was very, you know, spiritual to me. And I was writing down, I was thinking about that, about why, like digging deeper into why I felt it was a spiritual moment. And, it made me think of, us as part of, you know, seeing wildlife in this innocent moment that we could have missed without, if we had been 10 seconds later.
Yeah, let me set the scene, and then I'd like to hear you reflect on what was so special about it. But here's how I remember it. I was in a canoe with my son Aiden, and you were in a canoe with the other two guys,
right?
Aaron and Brad.
Yep.
And we'd had this signal that Brad had said, if you see wildlife on the shore,
right,
wave your paddle in the air to give the signal to the other boat,
yeah,
to basically shut up.
Right.
And we were on this Wadup Lake, which is a small kind of a
cigar-shaped
two other lakes, and the water was very calm, and we were actually looking for a place to stop for lunch.
Right.
At that time.
Yeah. Interesting part is we'd had that agreement about seeing something, and then it literally, I think Aaron, if I remember,
the photographer, it
happened to be like a very quiet moment, and he happened to say something like, if you see, and then it happened right then. Like
it was funny because he's the photographer, and he was also like, we're two or three days into the trip. I need to get some wildlife. There's, you know, like, let's keep an eye out for wildlife.
Right.
And then Aiden and I are coming up, and we see you guys, one of you guys waving your paddle in the air.
Yeah.
And I just stopped paddling.
Right.
And whispered to Aiden, stop paddling. And
yeah.
Of course, we also had a dog in the boat. So I was
hoping
the dog wouldn't see the wildlife and
and they were shaded
freak
too.
Out about it. Yeah,
so it wasn't an easy... In fact, if anything, I saw the calf at first.
Yeah.
Oh no, I saw the cow.
Uh huh.
And then I worked my way down. It was like, oh my gosh,
there's
a calf.
Yeah, underneath her, like on its knees underneath her.
Yes. Yeah.
And maybe nursing or something, because
it was in the calf was in the water, or at least was like right at the water's edge.
Okay.
And mom was, you know,
it was in. So part of that moment for me was you stop paddling a canoe and the canoe continues to float.
Yeah.
It's just like the canoe is floating slowly. You all were in rapt attention at this moose. We didn't know what you were looking at until we float. You know, there's this like suspense building and then there it is, like a moose, which... I don't know, man. There is something about a moose. Those animals are incredible to me.
Yeah, and there was just maybe it was the fact that we hadn't seen one.
Yeah.
You know, too. And the suddenness of Aaron, if I remember correctly, saying, you know, kind of a reminder about if we, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Silently. And then to have it right there. And then all we heard, I know it was breezy too at the time. You know,
the wind was pushing from behind us.
Right.
Yeah.
And
from out of the west.
But like you said, you guys floating along, as silent as it can maybe be.
Yes.
In the boundaries, but for the shutter of Aaron's camera.
That's right.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We got to shoot that.
We are here to do a story. Yeah.
No. But he was also discreet about it, too, because he didn't want to spook it.
But also remember then we pulled over right after that, right across that lake on the Canadian side.
There was that ledge, that little bedrock ledge.
We were all kind of in awe. I mean, it was as we sat there and ate lunch, almost like a spiritual moment had just happened. Like there had been what theologians call a thin place, you know, this kind of this place between... the present and eternity, like you got a little sense of something transcendent.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's hard to even put to words. I felt, you know, when thinking about it later and even editing your story when you brought it up, you know, I felt like, gosh, do we need to expand on this or is this an area where you just let, like you kind of did, is let the readers fill in? We don't have to answer. That's the part of good writing, good storytelling is you're going to set the scene sometimes. Do you need to tell the reader every last thing? You know, you want them to fill in the gaps, you know, just the same way a good film or something and the suspense. But honestly, I felt that almost like this random moment, like this kinship, like we're out there existing. Just this is what I was trying to get at about spirit and nature.
Yeah.
If, you know, thinking of it in totality, the connectedness, mm-hmm. maybe there's sort of like a native, you know, Native American sort of, I think of some writings like Charles Eastman. We just did a story about Charles Eastman and a Dakota, grew up in the Dakota Territory, and him being such a primal Native voice. But again, that whole, it's not kind of us and them, but I honestly felt there's sort of like a kinship thing going on. We're existing, and this moose, this cow and its calf are existing too, and we happen to overlap, and you know, we're in its space, it's in our space. I don't know. Had a, there's something there. I don't know. That's what I wrote down. Just like this feeling of we're just wildlife out there too. I mean, we just happened to interact in that moment.
Yeah.
And so I guess that's why, you know, I guess I applied the word spiritual to it. Cause it was something mysterious that you couldn't quite, that, like you're saying about the thin, you know, the veil, just beyond the veil kind of thing. Like I felt like we kind of experienced something, that kind of brought us back to maybe something even primal, or I don't know. It was interesting.
It is interesting, isn't it, when you're on a trip like that? Because I think back, like, what are the most memorable moments of that trip? And some of them are so material and mundane. Like, of course, I remember when I cracked my head on that log. Because it was a big, like, sensory moment for me. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, especially coming at a time
after a tough day,
and we had let our foot off the gas, right? We had all the, not tension, but there was, you know, saying anxiety and getting there, fighting the wind,
or fighting,
and then so you let down, and then bang, you do that. So if anything, it probably intensified that sort of like,
are we doing, it's just like, are we doing everything wrong?
Yeah.
We didn't get the campsite we want. We were paddling into the wind all day. We finally got a campsite, not a good one, that the Border Route Trail went right through.
Yeah.
And then I cracked my head so hard. Like, literally saw stars.
Yeah.
Literally saw.
Yeah, you did it. You did a number on it.
Jeez Louise. But then there's these other moments of the trip, like seeing the moose.
I don't think it would have been, you know. Yeah, sorry.
Well, there's other moments that are more, I guess, traditionally spiritual, I guess, you know, like that where something is happening and you feel like you're tapping into another plane.
Yeah. You know, again, I think if we were anticipating, and then had something happen, it wouldn't have had as much power because we would have been so attached to like seeing something, whatever.
Yeah.
Whereas this just, was so random that it made it just that much more real. You know, this mother and its offspring just trying to survive, right? Mm-hmm. Just trying to, and then us all knowing, as people who are into the outdoors, knowing the backstory of what's going on with climate and moose are facing challenges anyway, deer parasites and wolves and, you know, on and on and on. I think all of those things sort of threaded into that too. But I mean, I don't know how you, I came away with it again, just with a broader kind of feeling like we're part of the whole, we're all part of the whole. It's not just us, you know, man kind of.
You know, we're supposed to, are you part of a men's group or anything at your church?
I was. I led a men's group.
Oh, aren't you like a greeter? Are you a greeter, an usher, or something?
Yeah, it's kind of similar to an usher. Yeah, yep.
You take past the collection plates?
No, there's none of that anymore. It's all electronic.
Just swipe.
You stand there
with a swiper.
Yeah, that's right. Can you tap your card here as you take your seat and grab your latte?
You're like, you don't even need to swipe your card. We've already just charged it to your phone.
Yeah.
You don't even,
no.
By walking.
No, I greet people
at the front
at different entry
doors,
points to Eagle
Brook. You get assigned.
Yep.
You go to the biggest church in the state.
Yeah, and growing. They just opened a, well, Rochester's down at the Mayo Center has got a campus now too. So
where the pastor's piped in on a video screen, right?
Yeah, it's very similar campus to campus. There's certainly campus pastors at each of each of the locations, and then they all pipe into Lino where the, you know, to hear that week's message. So it could be Bob Merritt or Jason Strand.
And he's retiring.
Yep. In March. Yeah.
And do you think people at that church understand that that's, it's not a sustainable model to have a church that big? Like churches that big don't last. Do you know that?
Why is that?
Am I breaking this? Am I breaking some? I mean, churches that big don't last once the
once the
famous senior pastor leaves. They don't last.
You're saying because Bob's leaving, the church is going to start to
yes.
Oh, I don't know about
I see.
Yeah,
You drunk the Kool-Aid. Just mark my words.
You know what?
It just doesn't. I mean, there's a lot of evidence, and it just. Churches just because that church is so big. Didn't it have like 75,000 people on Christmas?
Yeah,
75,000.
It might not have
people.
Been 75. The exact I don't know.
But
exactly.
It was close to that.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, through all campuses. Yeah, and services.
That's
yes.
That's an extraordinary amount of people.
Are you saying because you know that whole charismatic figure thing, like Bob leaving will take the energy from? I don't.
And churches that it's just. I mean, it's hard to explain exactly, but it just is.
I think it's a big thing with Bob leaving for sure. There's no doubt.
That it's not sustainable.
I think, you know, Jason Strand.
Is he the anointed successor?
Yes, yeah. And Jason's, I don't know. We've been going there for more than 10 years and Jason's been there. I think they know what they're doing.
Okay.
They're very focused on the mission. They're not going to have like the rec league, basketball league, and then this and then that. They're very about staying focused.
I'll have you back on the podcast in 20 years. We'll talk about
my new church.
But my point in all that was one of the things that I thought after our trip, I didn't know you that well going into the Boundary Waters trip. I mean, we knew each other.
Right. We talk a lot about stories and, and reporting and things. Yeah.
But you, you know, when you're in a canoe with another guy, and I'm sure it's this way with women too. I'm just not a woman, so I don't know, but there's a lot of talk at churches about trying to get guys, men, to have intimate relationships with other men. Yeah. And there are a lot of men our age in their 50s who have very few friends. My dad died at age 76 2 years ago this week, and he died as a man with very few friends. Like, you could count them on one hand. He was a super lonely guy.
Why is that? Because of his pride or something? Or?
No, he just didn't know to reach out to other guys. I know there are guys who have a lot of guy friends.
Yeah.
But he didn't. And he's not alone in that. I think he retired from his job and he just didn't have a second act.
Yeah. He was a little aimless.
Yeah. He played played solitaire on his computer.
Well, I'll turn it back on you. How is that?
Scares the crap out of me.
Well,
Bob.
Not in just scared you, but Is it turned you in terms of like cultivating relationships and, you know, having.
Yeah, that's why I'm taking you out for a beer for your birthday right. after this.
Right.
Yes, it has. And when I was a pastor, I had a ton of friends because when you're a pastor, you're running an organization, a voluntary organization full of people.
Yeah.
So are they really your friends or whatever? I mean,
yeah, but if you had to thin slice that, who they're friends and then there are. Next level friends, right?
Very true.
Even in that list of church people.
But you know, my point in this is kind of ironic because one of the things I've always I've mocked about Christianity in the current world, present world, is that you go to this place and you stare at the back of people's heads and listen to one person talk.
Yeah.
And that's just not the way of the world anymore.
Yeah.
But here we are in a canoe.
Yeah.
Where I was staring at the back of your head.
Yeah.
Which might actually make it easier to have a more intimate conversation.
To be vulnerable.
Don't you think?
To be vulnerable. To talk about things.
So you and I would be locked in a canoe. We were 15 feet apart.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at the back of your head, and you can't even see me. For hours. We'd paddle for 2 or 3 hours and then take a break, paddle for another 2 or 3 hours. You and I talked about everything, man. We talked about our dads dying. We talked about our marriages. We talked about how we're raising our kids. We talked about our faith.
Yeah.
How often does that happen?
Right. Right.
In my life, not that often. I mean, when I go out for... Yeah. I go out for beers with some guys, or I'll sit next to a dad at a wrestling match, but we're not like going deep about our marriages.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. What is it about being out there? Was it setting that, you know, is this somewhat what you're getting at? Like,
I think
what is it about being in a canoe or being
hunting? I think it's partly
being in a blind
it's
with
the architecture of just the canoe.
Yeah.
Partly it's the architecture of the canoe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Partly it's
right. You're right. There's not the intimacy of me sitting across from you at a small
like we're doing
group
now and look
at a small group with a coffee
and read a Bible verse and then say, what does this
four,
mean to you?
Yeah, there's four of you.
And it's always posturing.
Yes,
and
that's true. That's true.
There was none of that.
Yeah.
And you're out there for a few days and I thought that was really special, and I've reflected on that as part of the spiritual experience of being in the Boundary Waters. And my other friend Brad, who was on the trip, and I never got to canoe with him on this trip, or maybe only briefly. He and I have had those too.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, maybe they're. You know, that's a good thinking about. Is it relevant that we're in the outdoors where you're feeling your truth, right? If you're you regard yourself as an outdoors person, mm-hmm. and you find, you know, the way people say the woods are my church, you know, you're talking about like Shug and Emery and so forth. And he's not the first person to say that,
right.
that I find divinity. I find, depth and truth and everything in the outdoors. But maybe there is something about us being out there where we feel, the most grounded, and it is that platform for having, you know, having these sorts of discussions in addition to just the way you connect with a person, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah,
and you and,
let's say we were taking a 4-hour driving trip and we sat and I was like, well, you just sit in the back so we don't have to
right.
We would probably have some good conversations if we went on a 4-hour drive together. But I don't know that it would, because there's so much other stuff when you're driving. There's just stuff going on around you and you gotta, you know, look out for other cars. You're not 100% dedicated to this conversation when you're canoeing.
Yeah. You're not pulling in all this information.
No, you just get in that rhythm, right, of the paddling. And once you get into the rhythm of the paddling.
It's the listening too.
Yeah.
You know, in that setting. Again, like you're saying, you're driving, you're checking this, you know, you're seeing the gas, you're seeing a light, you're seeing another car, a person, whatever. Here you're out there. Granted, you are being, you know, your senses, you're taking all of this in, mm-hmm. You know, skylines, tree lines, beautiful water. How are we doing? How am I feeling? Are my shoulders sore? But I don't know. Yeah, there's something... maybe hard to articulate about why that setting allows you just to be more honest, mm-hmm. more real with mm-hmm. yourself too. And again, that whole vulnerability thing, you know, that whole gut, you know.
Yeah, I think that's right. And getting away from your phone, your devices.
Yeah, right.
Has being an outdoors journalist and editor made the outdoors less spiritual and mysterious to you because it's also your job? Or has it not had that effect on you? You know, like,
yeah.
I talked to Dennis Anderson, and I think it was Dennis. It was somebody who said, you know, when they talked to us, talking to a sports writer one time.
Oh, you
and the guy was like, well, I'll tell you what I don't do in my free time is watch basketball.
Yeah,
because I get paid.
No, what I was
watch basketball.
Yeah, that's a good. Thank you for that segue, because I worked in sports before taking on this outdoors editing job, and we would make, you know, the sort of gallows humor about how working in sports kills your interest in sports. Mm-hmm. You know, I can recall nights where Liriano's got a no-no going in the eighth inning, and I am just begging for someone to get a hit so it doesn't, you know, so we didn't have to rip up the sports cover to accommodate
a no-hitter.
And sure enough, he threw the no-hitter that night. So it meant just like, you know,
more
an
work.
Hour, hair on fire and so forth. But yeah, that, you know, that's a great question. I mean, I don't, you're right. I'm thinking about the outdoors in so many different contexts.
Yeah.
You know, it's somebody's adventure. It's a climate issue. It's like Superior's flood, you know, is water tables out of, you know, there's all these sorts of different things. But no, I would say I can still go into the outdoors and look to do that as a way to just, you know, just sort of be right present. Mm-hmm. And the way sort of, you know, not to get too like Buddhist or something here, but
please get Buddhist.
Yeah. But the way, trying to really, let be with things, the way life is so, it's just always going to be a grind, right? We're going to have the dark things and heavy things, and we're going to have the light things, and then they're going to collide. And yeah. You can, I think of, you know, a great example of that is at a grad party, having the time, you know, having a great time celebrating some friend's son's graduation. And my wife Viv and I left the party, and I looked at my phone and had a text about my best friend being on life support after he had a heart attack. Mm-hmm. While out on his bike. And, you know, they're talking about the collision.
Yeah.
Of.
Yeah.
And so I think about, to try and reel that back in now, try and live my life just like really being present. And it does help me navigate in the same way nature just is, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is going to go on regardless of what I'm doing, you know, and so when I'm out there in it, there's sort of that, that piece of things changing and not changing, you know, and depending on where you go back to the same places to hunt. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You certainly go into things that are touchstones for you.
Absolutely.
That maybe remind you of,
moments, you know,
things,
in my life.
Moments in your life, yeah. And things that you value.
Yeah,
and that
sure.
Many of them course through things you've done in the outdoors, right? And does that make sense? The way nature is as well, you know, and things are going to be, things are going to be hairy and stormy, but it's also going to be a day like a Sunday ago where it was, you know, 45 degrees out and the brightest sun we'd seen in, you know, a month. And it was just breathtakingly beautiful. And that's what nature, that's what the outdoors are. It can be all those things.
Yeah. It's
right?
It's like we have to just take it as it is because it kind of pays us no heed.
Yes. Right.
Right?
That whole thing of, you know, nature doesn't care. Right.
Yeah.
We do kind of project our feelings and things cause we're human on what nature,
and of course
what nature is and what
it
isn't.
Yeah.
But, this is circling back to that whole feeling of nature. Again, those sort of native voices about it's not us dictating, you know, we as humans want to manage this, right?
Yeah.
You look at things and managing wildlife and managing this and trying to save that and whatever. And it's, whereas, you know, like a Charles Eastman, you know, this native writer would say, it just is, you know, this is part of this, the whole Mother Earth. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you have to embrace that part too. I don't know. So
what do you have just such an interesting vantage point because you get so many story pitches and you're putting together this weekly section and you're covering everything from hunting and fishing to camping to kayaking to mountain climbing to mountain biking to bird watching. I mean, you cover the people who watch the birds and you cover the people who shoot
the birds. And protecting habitat so the birds will thrive and we can shoot them.
So we can eat them. So we can eat them. Man, I made an incredible pheasant pasta sauce for dinner tonight. I mean, truly.
Did you?
Truly incredible.
Wait, what about that turkey? We'll digress here.
Smoked a wild turkey.
That looked great.
It turned out really great. Aiden, guess what he had for lunch today at school? My 15-year-old. A big wild turkey leg.
That's awesome. I can picture Aiden just
gnawing
into
that
sucker.
Table. Yeah. And I guarantee you that Aiden told every kid at that lunch table that it was a wild turkey leg. It was not just any old turkey leg. It was a wild turkey leg.
I can picture Aiden doing that with style.
You have this vantage point that's really amazing because you get to see, you know, what's happening, what's going on. I mean, I'm talking about beyond the, like, people are worried about climate change and what about mining on the boundary waters or whatever. Do you see any bigger, like, mega trends? I mentioned the Star Tribune outdoors section to somebody last week and they said, I think the Star Tribune has the last outdoor section in the country. Do you think that might be true?
Given what's happening to newspapering. I mean,
so strip out what's happening to newspapering.
And just attention to the think of the stories we read again and again about hunters and anglers. You know, these big broad pieces like the New York Times just wrote about
Hunters caring where their food comes from.
Yeah, and it's a licensing. You know, if they're not doing this, you know, where's the money to
find
support
more money
wild
for the DNR
wildlife? Yeah, exactly. I don't take it for granted. You know, we've gone through some. We're probably going to continue to go through print cuts, but the readership is very much shifting to the digital at the Strib.
Yeah.
I think we're always going to protect the print. Too, because we have that, you know, we have a core print readership, and we like to tell stories in print as well, and sort of the power of print, and then hope it transfers well to digital and things like that. Okay, so back to your question, though,
do you see anything from your vantage point that the rest of us?
Well, this
would
story
miss, maybe.
Well, this has come up in Minnesota for sure, and. You know, I've seen the same context in stories from other states. I think New York just had a story about women being the drivers. You know, if you're going to talk about the decline in hunting and fishing numbers, mm-hmm. when you bring up the number of women, and we could, you know, we can pull that data from the DNR, but women, and we did this actually in advance of the fishing opener last year, women, the numbers point to women helping sustain hunting and fishing. And I do notice we've done more even like one-off stories about women and whether it's like outreach programs, like becoming an outdoors woman through the DNR, which is wildly popular.
Yeah.
All sorts of workshops and trip, you know, environmental center trips and fishing trips and so forth down to just sort of one-off days fishing together on the lake. You know, some group that's doing a fishing day for women, ice fishing or otherwise. These things are, and that then gets into more to women enjoying the experience around other women. They don't want to go out with their with their husbands or their.
That's an interesting trend.
You know, the men in their lives.
Yeah.
And what's going on there? That whole psychology of what sort of barriers are there? Stereotypes. Of why they're not doing it and why they're embracing sort of being out with other women. No judging, right?
Yeah.
We're not going to talk about, not going to get into the gear, you know, sort of gear heady stuff. We're going to just let be. And if you don't know how to tie this or use that, we'll teach you. And so But I think women in the outdoors is, and I'm sure maybe, you know, I don't know enough about Shara Productions, but is there a show geared around a woman in the outdoors? You know,
no, I mean,
right?
Other than Laura Shara being the co-host right, of Minnesota right. Bound, so I think that's been, yeah. they've highlighted women, I think, for yeah. a long time.
But and you kind of hit on it too with the local food. There's yeah. there's some synergy there too
yeah.
with, you know, whether they call them like adult onset hunters or something,
right.
which is
yeah.
so such a weird label. But people who are coming to hunting because they do care about their food sources. I'm telling you, something you already know, but
yeah,
that could be a thing that, now again, how do you, you know, how do you strategically pour money into that?
Yeah.
And do that well to really help people see yeah. themselves doing that.
You know, one yeah. of the things I think too about the future of the outdoors and conservation that, and I think in some ways your weekly section is a microcosm of a bigger structural challenge. And that is, like I said, you have such a big umbrella for outdoors. Like you cover everything that has to do with the outdoors, and most.
Right.
periodicals or even websites are going to cover just mountain biking or just duck hunting
yeah.
or that they specialize, right?
Yeah.
And you're trying to be much more of a generalist.
Yes.
In putting this section together. And I personally think the future of conservation has got to be everybody in it together. I think that people
right.
who are bird watchers.
Consumptive recreation versus that
yeah,
whole debate.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. Right. People who are bird watchers need to partner
you're,
up with people who
you're
shoot
not paying
birds.
For a license. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
And say like because there are, it's a shrinking number of people.
Yeah.
So we have to pool our resources and we have to work together to lobby politicians
yeah.
and things like that. But my question is this.
Well,
and
can
it's
I
about,
jump in
yeah,
though first?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the whole thing with, we're so attached to labels, right? Think of,
uh-huh.
think of, we're not even going to go politically. Everybody, we're so attached to labels, and that is to our detriment. I've talked to people who are knee-deep in bird watching, and I'll drive 3 hours to go look at a boreal owl, and they also hunt.
Yeah.
You know
right.
what I mean? It's like...
And you don't hunt.
Right.
But you appreciate hunting.
Yeah, I grew up hunting when I was little. I went grouse hunting a few times.
It's just not something you do.
Right.
But you don't despise it
no,
or think it's bad
no.
for the world or anything.
No.
But my worry is this, that like with your with the Outdoors Weekend section, that it then becomes almost it tries to be all things to all people
yeah.
and by doing so nobody is passionate about it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because the mountain bikers, like, it's been 3 weeks and they haven't done a single story on mountain biking.
Yeah.
So they give or like, boy, they seem to be cutting back on the fishing coverage or
yeah.
whatever. And I in some ways I see your weekly section of newspaper as a beacon of hope that it can be done, that
yeah.
all the people who care about the outdoors can
yeah.
actually fit in the same tent.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I wonder if that's possible because people are so specialized. You know what I'm
yeah.
saying?
Oh, I absolutely know what you're saying.
Like, oh, I haven't read a story about duck hunting for months, so
yeah.
why would I keep opening that section?
I do think, given the divide between print readers, you know, I've run into so
yeah.
many. Like, if we went to Midwest Mountaineering Expo in the spring, and we actually, you and I have talked about this, doing a presentation, I've presented there on series we've done, and
yeah.
I'll ask, the room will be 60 people will be in there, mainly middle-aged, but the people who go to the Midwest Mountaineering Expo are outdoors people,
yes.
right? They
right.
they
yeah.
have all kinds of experiences. There were certainly a handful of young people. This is when we were talking about the Superior Hiking Trail Through Hike series. I asked how many people read the Feeling Superior Through Hike series. Every hand went up in print. Every hand went up, and it was six parts. How many of you read it online? Three hands. Maybe three hands read it online. And so now when we're in the context of us talking about the section and readership and so forth, I think if you, like you said, the whole feeling of general, if you came to the print section, I like the idea that you would feel like you can find something in here that interests me, whether it's a cabin tale,
yeah,
or some, you know, we do that little currents feature where it's what a person in the outdoors realm, regardless, they could be a concert wildlife manager, they could be a work for Bike Man as a information officer, whatever. Right. What are you reading? What are you listening to? What are you, because just curating their ideas is interesting to me. And I think people if you have a curious mind, if you go, I was going to ask you though, we maybe need to ask somebody impartial, but if you went to startribune.com/outdoors, if you fought your way to find that content.
Yeah, three or four menus deep.
If you, no one's doing that.
No.
Right? You're Googling Star Tribune, whatever the topic is.
Back door,
but if you went to it, I think you'd say it's predominantly hunting, fishing, conservation. And then, oh my gosh, here's a story about
Fat tire biking,
gravel riding on the North Shore, or something like that.
Right,
so,
right.
But see, in print, I feel like it's a very, and I run into more people like, I've never even read it.
You know what?
Online, or
that is, you make a really good point, and it's a good point to close on, and we can make a pitch to people to subscribe to their local newspaper, because you're right. Seeing the Outdoors Weekend section of the Star Tribune in print, you really do see the width of people, the broad width of people who care about the outdoors.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because you'll see a little thing from some DNR conservation officer, and you'll see somebody who's a cross-country skier, and you'll see a story about RVs, and you'll,
Right. Well, you know what, too?
Yeah,
I don't know how
that's good.
Yeah, I don't know how this feeds into this, but if we, I do hear from people that we've got a really good iPad app, and that they see the printed paper on their iPad.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're digital readers who are seeing it. So, in that regard, you might be winning some people over, like, oh my gosh. But I think anything on our desktop and even our mobile, you know, I hope I have a job after if anyone hears this from her. But
That's good.
No, it's just,
yeah.
We make them work too hard, and then I'm not young too. I know my kids don't. They're not going to go to StarTribune.com necessarily. They're going to Google whatever the local story.
Whatever.
Yeah, D'Angelo. You know, body. You know, they're not going to the Star Tribune to see.
Yeah.
Now, hopefully, we come up in that first take.
Yeah.
Right. We have one of those first page headlines. We have headlines on that first page. You see.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Well.
Yeah. It's, you know, just keep working hard and trying to surprise people.
You're my editor. So here's the last thing.
Yeah.
I feel like I need a sign off on this podcast. Like, we'll see you in the great outdoors. Or, you know, like Ron Cheros was always, make sure you introduce a kid to the great outdoors.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I feel like I need a sign off.
Does it have to have a spiritual component?
Probably should, I'm the Reverend
Let's
Hunter.
See if Mary Baker Eddy said anything.
Is there any, I should probably have a benediction. I should have
see you in the great lab of nature, laboratory of nature. No, Charles Eastman.
Close with this.
No, but Charles Eastman wrote, and again, this speaks to modern culture, the way we're just bombarded with.
Yeah.
With rhetoric now and fear and, you know, visually just everything coming at once, the exhausting nature of that. And he, you know, Charles Eastman is writing all this back in the late 19th century, but he said, in civilization, there are many deaf ears and blind eyes. In the great laboratory of nature, there are endless secrets to be discovered.
Amen.